Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. Joining us, as always, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, not to mention the author of Harvest.
The check American is in Magic. The mail, Ed. Yeah.
And again, just in case you hadn't seen it,
he's a handsome dude.
There's a handsome dude there right for you. That's a handsome dude in 1986-ish. So there you go. Same mustache. That's how you do it.
Oh, yeah,
same guy. Same
that's
mustache.
Right. Different color.
It was a fun conversation last week. I got to tell you, I know we talked about it while we were doing it. I don't know that I've ever had a more fun podcast episode with you, Andrew, than doing that one, because I was so stoked to spring that little surprise on you talking about your book. And
you read it the weekend before, and I figured we were going to talk regular, and then all of a sudden, boom, I was surprised pleasantly.
Good.
I suppressed it widely online. So
I saw that. Thank you very much. I was also suppressing it widely online. And yes, I think we got a big audience for that one, and deservedly so. It was a really, I sent a note over to Selena Zito, because we talked about Selena just a little bit in our conversation, because she's one of those reporters that is like you. You know, you're out there actually talking to people, sort of, you know, old school shoe leather reporting. Yeah. Talking about people, getting the larger context, and especially focused, you know, as you were, on the rural and industrial heartlands, right? And so I sent it over to her. I said, hey, you know, let me know what you think about this. And I didn't hear back from her for a day or so. So I just pinged me about something else. I pinged her, hey, did you ever get a chance to think? She said, I sent you a response and it forgot to hit send. She says, I absolutely loved it. Loved it. It was great. And so she sends along her best to you.
Well, same to her. She's very, very good. Of course, I was unusual in the New York Times in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, in that I was not from the Northeast, and I went to a heartland university. And I was interested in what was happening in flyover country. And so one of my colleagues, a big city colleague, said, boy, am I glad you're here, because now I don't have to cover the small town shit. And, I thought, that kind of encapsulates it. And that's why it's flyover country for them. You know, they like to not go there. And therefore, they're out of touch, and therefore Trump surprised them, as did George Wallace. When George Wallace, I remember, what was this, early 70s, I was traveling around, and there was a lot of stuff out for George Wallace. And in fact, on the campaign planes, on the Wallace campaign plane, the TV crews, some of them had George Wallace stickers on their luggage. And I told New York, I said, there's something going on here. There's a lot of people, maybe it's quiet to you, but there's a lot of people thinking about George Wallace. And the editors in New York, no, they couldn't. And then he won the Michigan primary and surprised the hell out of a lot of people. So, it's a sad fact. There's a wonderful story that encapsulates it. It's no doubt apocryphal, but in Boston, there was a Boston family having lunch at a restaurant, and next to them was a middle American family. And the Boston woman leaned over and said, I notice your accent. Where are you people from? And the woman said, well, we're from Iowa. And the Boston woman said, well, in the Northeast, we pronounce it Ohio.
And ladies and gentlemen, that is not from jokesoftheday.net. That
no,
is
it's a not.
Story.
That's an actual story. And, you know, what's his name? Joe Biden did the same thing in 2020 when he was campaigning. He was at a town hall. And he asked the people, the Iowans at the town hall, he asked them what they thought about the improvements in the Ohio infrastructure. And, you know, nobody, I heard it and read it, and everybody's like, well, okay, they're all four letters. What's the difference? They're little states and they don't really matter. And that's what Trump plugged into.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And it's still plugging into to this day. And it didn't start with Trump. Trump was just the product of it. And that's what we were talking about last week.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We got a lot of stuff to talk about this week still. But I just wanted to get that in there one more time. If you haven't watched last week's episode, go back and check it out, because it was a lot of fun. I had a great time.
It was fun. And we've had a lot of fun in 16 years, but that was funner.
There you go. It was the most funner episode we've ever done.
That's right.
All right. So this week we're going to get to your VIP column over at redstate.com. Forget Joe Biden, what Donald Trump must do to deliver a GOP victory. But I want to talk about a couple of things that are happening in the media right now. Let's start with the silly one. Don Lemon. And I was just trying to catch Andrew up to this story just briefly before we got started here. Don Lemon had been fired by CNN, right? I mean, he sort of flamed out rather spectacularly after declaring that women over 50 were past their prime and not worth covering in terms of politics. Remember the Nikki Haley thing? She's past her prime. You know, if you're a woman, you're past 50, you're past your prime. Poppy Harlow was a little unhappy about that. Poppy Harlow and I forget who the other, may have been Aaron Burnett, that was on set for that little quip. And eventually CNN, which was trying to sort of push him out the door anyway, eventually cut ties with him. So Lemon decided he was going to self-publish. And I mean, Tucker Carlson did it on Twitter /X or X/Twitter. And, you know, it's, if you can do it, you know, you can do it on Substack, you can do it on X, you can do it, you know, any place where there's a built-in audience, and try to build your brand. And so we decided to do that, and he partnered with Elon Musk. And this is not long after Elon had partnered with Tucker Carlson. And reportedly, Elon Musk was looking for someone on the left to sort of balance out the Tucker Carlson thing, because he wanted to sort of promote the platform as, you know, wide-ranging, anything goes sort of thing. So Don Lemon decided that Elon Musk was going to be his first interview on this new platform. And he discovered what Matt Taibbi discovered, which is that anything goes except when it comes to Elon. Elon does not like getting criticized on his own platform, especially by the guy who he is negotiating with to partner up on this new platform thing. And
this is kind of like business 101, it seems to me.
Isn't it? So Musk says, well, we're not going to do this. Now,
you said Lemon had a very aggressive, hostile interview.
Yeah, he had a very aggressive, hostile interview. He was kind of grilling Elon Musk about his use of ketamine, which is a sedative. It's a rather powerful sedative, which he's talked about in the past, and says, you know, arguing with him about moderating content on Twitter, or how, you know, why aren't you moderating harmful content on Twitter? And he says, well, we remove illegal content, and that's as far as we're going to go. You know, well, no, but this stuff is harmful, and why aren't you doing this? And on and on and on. And, you know, Musk finally said something to the effect of, I don't really feel like I need to answer questions like that from reporters. Which should have been a signal to Don Lemon that maybe he pushed things a little too far. And sure enough, Musk decided, we're not going to do this with Lemon. And Lemon can do it if he wants, but I'm not paying him to do it. You know, he can be on the platform. I'm not barring him from the platform, but we're no longer partnering with him, and he's on his own.
This is like Keith Olbermann, you know. I mean, there are guys like that, and that's their brand, is to be dumbasses.
Oh, yeah, dumbasses. I mean, honestly, Matt Taibbi, you know, I subscribe to his Racket News thing because it's really good. And he and I probably don't agree on a lot of things, but he's really good. And he's really honest. He just took Lemon to the woodshed over this. And Taibbi had the same problem with Elon Musk, right? Elon Musk brought him in to do the Twitter files. They were very successful at partnering on that. A few months down the road, Taibbi wrote something that was critical of him and just locked Taibbi out. Just locked him out. I think it was over Substack because Taibbi was publishing on Substack for the most part. He was publishing the Twitter files on Twitter because of the agreement. And but everything else he was doing on Substack. And Twitter decided to, it wasn't that they blocked Substack links, but they didn't allow a click through or something like, it was some really weird thing because Musk saw Substack as a competitor to Twitter, which is kind of a strange idea anyway. And Taibbi criticized him for it. And that was it. Suddenly Taibbi was dead to Elon Musk. And so, you know, Taibbi understands that Elon Musk is a thin-skinned billionaire, and I frankly would be amazed to find a non-thin-skinned billionaire.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? But I mean, Andrew, I mean, look, I've been in and around this business for 20 years now, and I think that, it, you know, like on the day that Salem bought Hot Air, if I'd had an opportunity to interview my boss for a video presentation, right? And certainly had the infrastructure in place for it because it was at CPAC when we announced it that year. And I don't think the first thing I would have sat down is to make my new boss answer criticism after criticism after criticism of his platform. I might be interested, I might say, in actually maybe promoting the platform because it's going to feed me for a while.
Yeah, I guess he I don't know what Monsieur Lemon was attempting to do, but build his brand as an aggressive lefty on Trump's platform. But geez, get the contract signed first, Donnie.
It's only Le Mans if it comes from the Le Mans region of French. Otherwise, it's just sparkling idiot. And
could I have some lemon Le Mans, please?
Yeah, the
not too dry.
I understand what he's going for, right? He's trying to show his independence, but that's really a stupid way to go about it. Alienating the guy who's your partner before he's actually formally your partner. And this touched off, you know, this sort of back and forth where Lemon started criticizing Musk for being thin-skinned. And then on Friday, somebody leaked what is purportedly the demands that Lemon put up, which were, I mean, it was like he wanted $5 million up front. He wanted a private jet to go to this convention that Musk wanted him to appear at. He wanted a private masseuse. He wanted a suite this thing. You know, he wanted
it's a sort of normal thing, Ed, that you bring up in a job interview. this is what I want. These are the minimum. If you want to give me more, I'll take it. But
yeah, this is a guy who, I mean, again, not to beat the dead horse here, but this was a guy who got chased out of CNN for claiming that women over 50 were past their prime and not worth discussing in political context. So then when that leaked out, his camp denied all of it. None of that's true. It's all false. Maybe so. I mean, I don't know. The New York Post ran with it. They must know who their source was. My sources tell me that the initials were EM, and that doesn't stand for Ed Morrissey. I don't know. I don't know who the source was. I'm just joking around. But maybe it's not true. But then Lemon goes on. He gets into an interview with People magazine. And this is the part that really, I wasn't even going to write about it just because, you know, I was going to maybe do a headline link to Taibbi's post about Lemon because it was just delicious. But then I read this And I'm going to give you, I'm going to read this. This is from his interview with People Magazine. Okay. This is what he told
People Magazine. Whose interview?
Lemon's interview with People Magazine. So he says, well, I knew that I went into this with my eyes open. I've interviewed many world leaders, presidents to convicts, and no one has seemed more sensitive or touchy than Elon Musk. And during the interview and during other interviews, he constantly says that he doesn't care what people write or say about him. For someone who doesn't care about what people write or say about him, he sure does care about what people write or say about him. He's not used to being held to account. He's not used to having to answer to anyone, especially someone like me who doesn't share his worldview, who doesn't look like him. You know what I'm saying? And it's, yeah, we know what you're saying. This is called, you know, race card. Race card. So there's that. And it doesn't explain why Musk would have partnered with him in the first place if he was unhappy about Don Lemon not looking like him, because I'm pretty sure that he had a pretty good idea what Don Lemon looked like. He's trying to cut this deal with him. We never did actually finish up. So, you know, I guess the issue here is, if you're interviewing somebody who's a newsmaker, you don't want to be a cheerleader for that person. You know, on the other hand, you don't want to go out of your way to be antagonistic with them either, especially if you're trying to partner with him for your new platform. And everybody knows it, right? I have no idea what Lemon thought he was doing
here. Well, I'm not sure he was thinking. If you're interviewing somebody, the object is to get information, and to get information in an honest, open way. There are a number of ways of doing it. One of the standard tools is to ask the interview subject questions that you know the answer to. And then if they're telling you something wrong or incorrect, then you got to be extra wary. But there is an element, it's not phony, but there is an element of ingratiating yourself with interview subjects so that they will be more comfortable in sharing information and themselves and making the interview more worthwhile, more worthy of people listening or reading. I mean, that's just common sense. If you go in to see a shrink, he doesn't start off with, boy, are you a dumbass? You start off with questions, and they're often easy questions to get things going, and questions that you may know the answers to, but making them comfortable is part of the job. And then at the end, you can answer the antagonistic questions. Once you've gotten what you need, you can answer, if it's necessary to ask hard questions, then you do. And if they don't want to answer, you've got the other stuff anyway, and you can still do your story. But you don't start off with, why are you such a dumbass? It's just, that's human nature, right? I mean,
Yeah, I don't know how it started off, but I do know that I'm going to have to look for another shrink, because that's how conversations start off every week. Where were you when I was actually looking around for a shrink? And I mean, I thought that's how it was supposed to start. Boy, are you
dumbass? You know, I saw a cartoon where, I saw a cartoon where there's a shrink sitting by an empty couch, and the shrink is saying, no, you're delusional. And yeah. Then there was another one about a guy drowning, and the guy drowning in the pond yells, Lassie, get help. And the next picture is Lassie on her shrink couch talking about her puppy days.
Good, actually. I wouldn't have thought about that one, but yeah, that's
pretty. Anyway,
So,
yeah, well,
I mean,
so
you don't want to look like a sucker. I mean, the thing is, you don't want to look like a sucker, right? If Tucker Carlson is interviewing Elon,
you can be professional. Yeah, you can be professional, which is, I'm not in your camp. I'm not out of your camp. I'm trying to get information. And if they don't, then that's revealing too.
Well, yeah. And look, I mean, I think that if you're going to do a, I mean, if you're going to do a first episode with the guy that you're part, who's going to be your business partner, and everybody knows it's your business partner because you've been talking about it publicly, right? This is the guy who you're going to partner with. I mean, I would be talking about the nature of the partnership. I'd be talking about what are you trying to accomplish by creating this space for, you know, long form discussion, because Twitter has always been a short form discussion platform up till now. You know, what are your plans? And in that, you can say, well, what are your plans in terms of moderation? If he says, we're not going to moderate anything except illegal content, then you say, okay, I mean, and move on, right? I don't know that, what was it that he was trying to get at by going after Elon Musk's drug use? I mean,
yeah, he's trying to show how tough he is against somebody they regard as right wing.
Well, I think that was it. And, you know, honestly, my feeling on this is that he's basically trying to do this as an audition for MSNBC or some other mainstream platform.
Sure. Yeah, of course. There's a reason behind the reason. Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's my guess, because it's the only thing that really makes sense, is because there's no other reason to bite the hand that hasn't even yet started feeding you.
Bite the hand that's preparing dinner.
Bite the hand that might feed you if you don't demand $5 million, a massage, and a private jet. If that's true, and you know, he and his agent swear that that's not true, that that's fake news. Okay, maybe. But unfortunately, we're still going to have Don Lemon to kick around. It's just, I have no idea where he thinks he's going to take this platform next. Maybe a Substack, who knows? But Matt Taibbi had a lot of, had many thoughts about this, had many thoughts about Don Lemon, First Amendment martyr.
Yeah.
You'll have to read it as Substack, because I subscribe, and honest to God, it's worth it for moments like this. And it's worth it because he did a great job on the Twitter files too. It's the reason why I subscribe to Twitter, is because Elon Musk, for all of his faults, and he's got them, including being really thin-skinned, he's the guy who actually uncovered all of this government censorship. And it's worth $84 a year for me to kick in to sort of reward that. That's really, honestly, my entire thought process behind subscribing.
You know, that's a good point. The people on the right, I don't care about the ones on the left, but people on the right need to understand that lunch isn't free, if it ever was.
Yeah.
They need to support conservative outlets, whether it's Hot Air or Red State or whatever. It's much less than a Starbucks, you know. I mean, the last sale I saw was 50% off, at least over at Red State, which brings it down to $2 and change a month. It's not a small thing to support independent, non-liberal sources of commentary and news. And so I think people need to get onto it. The Wall Street Journal started first back in the 90s, and they got it right. And people complain, oh, I can't read your stuff because it's behind the paywall. And I go, well, yeah, I mean, I don't get a benefit from it, I guess, but it supports the conservative information movement and makes all the technology possible. So
makes this possible. I know that we don't do this behind a paywall, but I mean, the fact that I can take the time to do this once a week with you and occasionally with other people and do it for free is largely driven by the fact that we're getting resources from paying members. And that's the reason why we do so many of these podcasts and shows behind the paywall, so that they're getting something for their money. And that's because advertisers have gotten skittish over the last few years, thanks in large part to activists that have gone after advertisers on the basis of political content. And just they're just not steering any ad dollars this way.
And I'm sorry. And Facebook has demonetized a lot of the commentary, so that there's no income from there as there used to be. And
yeah, the Facebook thing, we never actually built our financial model on Facebook, but I know some publications that did and really collapsed because of it. We've always had a sort of an independent approach to this. But I mean, there are fine publications too. I won't name names. You probably know them because they're not here anymore, and you're probably wondering what happened to them. Conservative publications, good writers who base their finances on using Facebook as their platform, and then Facebook changed the rules and yanked the rug out from underneath them. And Substack, I mean, Substack is a good self-publishing platform, as long as Substack doesn't start enforcing the same type of things as Facebook did. It's unlikely, though, because Substack is a subscription model rather than advertising model for the most part. But self-publication really is how you get it done, and direct support from your readers. I mean, that's what Don Lemon's going to have to go looking for. He's running out of billionaires, Andrew.
Yeah.
All right. I want to get to a meatier one before we get to your post. I don't want to, we've already spent probably too long on Don Lemon.
Yes.
The bloodbath comment that Donald Trump made. Now, he's talking specifically about economics. He's talking about tariffs. He's talking, when he's making this bloodbath comment, I'm not going to play the clip. And rather, he's saying if we lose the election, there's going to be an economic bloodbath because tariffs and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The media turns this into, oh, he's threatening violence. Bloodbath is a code word for threatening violence. The same media outlets, within a day or two, use bloodbath in very similar, in very similar allegorical use as Donald Trump did. There's a video floating around where MSNBC used it, I think the same day or the day before, right? And then freaked out because Donald Trump said bloodbath.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's unacceptable.
I mean, this is, and Elon Musk is actually one of the ones that are saying this is ridiculous. They've cut the context out of this. Here's the larger clip. It's as if they don't care that they're getting caught. And I think that that's the case. I don't think that they care. I think all they care is just laying out the narrative.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And on the other side, having worked in government and politics for 9 or 10 years, you would think the experience that Donald Trump has had and has the attention he's gotten from media that he has sought avidly, that he would be aware and perhaps modify his some of his rhetoric. I know the crowd loves it, and they love him attacking fellow Republicans, but it's not constructive. I mean, it gets you cheers, I guess, which are important to him, but he just needs to be, or anyone needs to be careful. Because it's so easy to take something out of context these days. And what do the people who commit the crime of taking it out of context, they don't pay any penalty. They've already gotten that 10,000 hits. So they're happy as a clam. They don't care if people are now criticizing them. That makes another story. It's And plus the fact, I just don't like Republicans playing the victim. all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm tired of that.
So, well, yeah, but I mean, what is that?
No, you're right. You're right on the media. If the media had a conscience, which they don't, and if they were adhering to the principles that got them a constitutional protection from the founding fathers, they wouldn't do that kind of stuff. But they do. And so if you're going to play, you got to know that there's going to be some cheap shots and blindside hits out there. Keep your head on a swivel.
You know, and I mean, exactly. And it would be one thing if it was sort of random, I guess, but it's always in one direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's always, there's only one side pouncing. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And you hear a lot of concern, I think justified concern, over AI and deepfakes, right? You had a deepfake of, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu talking about genocide, or Vladimir Putin talking about launching a nuclear war, and people are going to react to that. I'll give you one today. Apparently, there were Russian bots out there that were doing deepfakes of British media announcing that King Charles had died. And everybody looked around and said, oh, he hadn't even noticed. I'm just kidding.
Well, you remember when Calvin Coolidge died? There was a New Yorker writer. They said, you know, the president just died. And I said, how do you tell?
How can you tell, right? Exactly. Well, and the British embassy in Moscow had to say, no, King Charles is very much alive. Thank you very much. And please stop screwing around on the internet. A plea that, you know, we can all relate to. But again, I mean, we have concerns over that type of stuff because it's here, that technology's here, and it's going to make it difficult for us to determine what's actual and what's being faked. But honestly, if the media is doing this with a word that's used constantly in terms of, you know, hyperbolic description, bloodbath is a very commonly used term in sports, in economics, in practically everything. It just means something bad. You know, this, you know, it's a, the jobs report was a bloodbath because you had a bunch of layoffs. I mean, that's all it means. It's just it's a hyperbolic identifier. To turn that into, oh, this is a threat to the union, is really desperate.
desperate to feed their negative narrative about Trump. Yep.
Yep. Selena is sending around she's retweeting a gag from something called World of Engineering. It says, breaking, scientists warn that Earth could run out of conspiracy theories by 2026 if they keep coming true at the current rate. That is a finite resource, people. I'm just saying. It doesn't seem like it, but I think maybe we've reached peak conspiracy theory. I'm not. Anyway. You know, we're almost done here. We didn't mention.
Right.
Forget Joe Biden.
Unfortunately, people, we've run out of time and we can't talk about that piece of shit that Malcolm wrote on Sunday.
That's not true. We've got time to talk about that extraordinary, article that you wrote. What Donald Trump must do to deliver a GOP victory. I think this really does focus on the fact that you can't just say I'm not Joe Biden, right? Because Joe Biden actually did sort of win in 2020 by saying I'm not Donald Trump.
Exactly. And
voters are not going to be, well, I don't know if they're not going to be fooled again, but it's going to be tougher to fool voters this time around. He's going to have to make a positive pitch for why he should get the office back. And it can't just be Joe Biden is senile, although that's not a bad pitch.
And he also probably ought to stop attacking Republicans who didn't vote for him, because there aren't enough Trumpers to elect him.
He went after DeSantis again. I think it was yesterday or today. And DeSantis endorsed the guy.
DeSantis endorsed you, and he hasn't said anything critical. You know, when, and this was in the column, when Nikki Haley suspended her campaign, naturally, she didn't endorse anybody. You do that later if you're going to do it. And while she was doing it, he was online calling her bird brain again. And I said, you know, he used to be a rookie politician. And I know his crowd will say, oh, well, that's because we love him because he's so genuine. But genuine is that can be suicidal. You may not like the guy who's endorsing you, but take it. I have doubts about the importance of endorsing, but
me too.
Whether it matters at all. And I know campaigns, they compile lists. I was involved in that in 2000. I don't know if I'm going to vote because 13 state senators in Iowa endorsed Donald Trump. That has nothing to do with me. So he could have, when she suspended her campaign, say, well, you ran a good race. You know, he killed her everywhere they met, except in a couple of places. You ran a good race. You've got some strong Republican ideas, and I appreciated your help in my administration, which I picked you to be an ambassador in. Let's all get together now as a united party and fight the real opponents that are Biden and Harris. But no, he's going after her still. And then again, after Ron DeSantis. Well, he just needs some self-discipline. He's not going to, but he does need some self-discipline if he's going to win. And that raises the question, Ed, which is also in the column. Does he really want to be president again? You know, he announced in the, make it the long, what was it, November in 2022? He announced, which makes it the longest by far presidential campaign in history. And he didn't do much for the first few months, which makes you wonder, why did he? And there are some people suggesting that he did it for fundraising because he's going to need multiple millions for the law cases. He obviously, anybody who doesn't realize this, he loves the attention. He craves it. He creates it, even when it hurts his cause. Remember during his administration, he'd have a plan, a message plan for the whole week. And then on the first day, he would come out with something outrageous and it just blew his whole agenda out of the water of what he was trying to sell that he actually had done that was positive for the country, all over another fight with somebody he was calling names. You know, I guess the names, nicknames, insulting nicknames worked in 2015 and 2016 because he was new and refreshing, but I think they grew old and he's still using them. So there's a bunch of things like that he can do. Obviously, he's busy with his legal entanglements, but his crowd, the people that love him and adore him, and he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and they'd still vote for him, they aren't enough.
Nope, they're not.
Just flat out. He won in 2016. Narrowly, because he got, I think it was like 70,000 votes in three states that Hillary had ignored.
Yep.
And so it was a very wise strategy that lucked out for him. I'm not sure he thought he was going to win, but he did. And that's a historic upset. Hillary's votes were 3 million more than he got. But they were all concentrated in obvious places, so they were wasted, like California and New York. So it's just, it's sad because Trump did so many positive things policy-wise.
Right, yes.
And then to come out, as he did in November, and say, well, we're really going to wreak revenge. What? Shut up. You know, I mean, if there's any firing of people that gave you gas. Just be quiet about it. So what's the point? You're going to lose people, especially women and independents who are persuadable. So that was what the column was about. And we'll see. As I said, I doubt he's going to change, but he could. He could have a unity moment at the convention in Milwaukee in July, and everybody's on stage. Remember the last time he tried that, Ted Cruz didn't praise him enough in his convention speech, as I recall. Something that Cruz didn't do. And Trump, because Trump had insulted his wife and his family and his father's patriotism, and I just.
Well, that was in 2016, just to be clear. It was in
2016. Yeah, at the convention.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So that's at redstate.com. You go to redstate.com, look up Andrew, and you can go to, he's again being the prince of Twitter and all, you go to his Twitter account. and the link is right there. We are now at the jokes of the week stage. I don't know if you have any this week or not.
I got a couple. They're old, but I think they're still worthy. Jay Leno says, there's scary news now. Gasoline could be $6 by the summer. But the good news is Obama is aware of it and will continue to talk about it between fundraisers. And Seth Meyers says, a new study reveals that parents who spend more time on their smartphones have more negative interactions with their children, while parents who spend less time on their smartphones are really mad that they forgot their charger.
Tell me, are more likely to have children.
Yeah, that's right, right. And finally, Seth Meyers again, he says, AMC, the world's largest theater chain, lost nearly $5 billion from theater closures during the pandemic. Experts say it could take up to 10 large popcorns to make it all back.
It's that's tough. Yeah, that's
I, you know, I went up, I went, I, the last movie I saw was James Bond, but I went to buy a popcorn and my wife said, are you going to share? I said, okay. So I got a large pop. I wanted to get a large popcorn and the drink. It was $20.
Yeah. It ain't cheap.
No.
And in part because the theater owners don't really make money on the movie tickets. Almost all of that goes to the distributor.
So at the only beginning, right? But the longer it runs.
Yes, that's true. First week, second week, third week, and they get a larger slice of the ticket after that, assuming anybody's buying tickets. That's the trick. You can make money off the blockbuster.
And that's the studio's encouragement to keep it in because right. They're going to make more money. Right. But you're right. You're right. The concessions are a huge ongoing income stream.
And I feel bad because I almost never buy it anymore because popcorn's not good for my blood sugar. So I will.
Is that right? Really?
Well, it's just any kind of carb. If you're eating a bunch of carbs, it's just not good for you.
I didn't know that.
But
thanks, Ed. You ruined today. Yeah, so.
Captain.
Captain Downer.
Captain Buzzkill, yeah, Debbie Downer, Captain Buzzkill. I went to see Cabrini, right? Which is about 2.5 hours long. And by the end of the movie, because I had bought a drink, by the end of the movie, the first time we went, it was just my wife and I. And I was having to translate the Italian because the descriptive audio device at that one theater didn't work. So I'm translating the audio and I'm trying to describe what's going on the screen. And I'm drinking this thing. And I'm telling you that I could not get out of that seat fast enough when the credits were rolling into the bathroom. I actually left her in the theater to listen to the credit music because I wanted to go to the bathroom and then came back and got her.
So you didn't wait to learn who was the gaffer boy.
No, I didn't. I didn't. And the second time we both went and took my mom. And those descriptive audio devices were working. And I'm drinking the 36 ounce thing again. And I'm about halfway through it and I realize I have to find a spot in this movie to get up and go, but at least now she's got the descriptive audio.
That's right. That's right. It's not a blank. Yeah. Right.
So I just don't learn. Anyway, I got a couple of jokes for you. Then we gotta wrap this up.
Okay.
So man's having trouble with his wife. So he goes to his shrink and the shrink says, "You're pretty stupid." No, that's from the joke. Shrink says, "This is what you do when you go home. Throw down your briefcase, run to her, embrace her, tear off all her clothes, and make mad passionate love to her." So in 2 weeks, he comes back to the shrink. Shrink says, "Well, how'd it go?" He says, "Well, she didn't really have anything to say, but her bridge club got a hell of a jolt out of it." Last one. It's a little bit more racy than that. The truck's been out on the road for 3 weeks, and he stops at a brothel outside of Vegas. He goes right up to the madam, throws down $500 and says, "I want your ugliest woman and a bologna sandwich." And the madam says, "You know, that for that kind of money, you could have one of my finest ladies in a 3-course meal. The trucker replies, "Listen, I ain't horny. I'm just homesick."
Oh, my goodness.
Jokesoftheday.net. By the way.
Clark County is the only, which is Vegas, is the only place where prostitution is illegal. Not that it matters, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, because that never goes on in Las Vegas.
No. But listen, Ed, before we go, there's an important thing I want to bring up in my contract about the private jet. I haven't got the tail number from you or Salem yet, so.
Let's see. I think it's FU1 was the tail number.
So you're saying there's a chance to get the spa?
I think there might be a chance for a massage. Possibly. I don't know. You have to check in with your agent. But in the meantime, everybody else should check in for the prince of Twitter, the regent of redstate.com at A.H. Malcolm is where you find him on Twitter and redstate.com. All of his stuff is over there. Andrew, once again, another fine week, and can't wait to do this again next week.
All right, buddy. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Edward. See you later.